Hi.
I'm Karen Hartglass, your host of It's All About Food. It's All About Food. And we're here today to talk about all things related to food. It's one of my favorite subjects, and I know it's many people's favorite subject. We all have all kinds of different issues related to food. But here, most of the time, we talk about health, environment, and the treatment of animals, and how they're all connected, and how we are all connected. And I'm really looking forward to this program today. I've been looking forward for a long time. I'm going to be talking with Abreeze Harper, the editor and one of the contributors in the new book, Sista Vegan, Black Female Vegans Speak on Food, Identity, Health, and Society. I just finished the book, and I'm just so excited about it. So, Abreeze Harper, as a PhD candidate in geography at the University of California, Davis explores how critical race and feminist theories can be employed as analytical tools with critical food geographies. She engages mostly in qualitative research and believes that this is a useful complement to much of the statistical information about health in the Black community. Abreeze Harper graduated from Harvard in 2007 with a master's in educational technologies. Her master's research investigated what are the challenges that Black female vegans using vegan-based health activism face when using cyberspace to promote and network around vegan-based health advocacy and awareness, particularly for the Black community. And let's see here. Her thesis title is Cyber Territories of Whiteness, Language, Colorblind Utopias, and Sista Vegan Consciousness. She connects her thesis work to her most recent anthology project, Sista Vegan, Black Female Vegans Speak on Food, Health, Identity, and Society, which we're going to talk a lot about today, which weaves together stories, poetry, and critical essays by Black identified female vegans of the African diaspora. Book chapters focus on veganism that she has written. Veganporn.com and Sista Explorations of Whiteness Through Textual Linguistic Cyber Minstrelsy on the Internet. I didn't get that quite right. Anyway, she lives in California with her baby and her husband. Abreeze, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing great. How are you? We're all good.
I'm good. Very excited about this interview. I've been looking forward to it for a while now. So.
Yeah, me too. Well, I've been waiting for this book for decades. I'm white, and I do the best that I can to make connections with everyone, and with the organizations that I've been involved with, I've always been trying to connect with all different kinds of communities, and I can't say that I have been tremendously successful with this community, and I'm so glad to read this book and to read what everyone has to say, and I want to buy it and give it to so many people because I think we can all relate to it on so many different levels. My first question is, did you send a copy to Michelle Obama?
No, I didn't, but, you know, that's a really good
idea. Oh, my God,
idea.
Because, you know, I'm jumping all over the place already, but, you know, she's got this new platform about wanting to improve the health of children and the food in schools, and I just think this is such a great tool, and I think she would love it, so send her a copy.
I think I will then. Yeah, I was telling some of my colleagues that it feels like I'm at a really good place right now in terms of creating a message that is culturally specific to the Black female experience and getting funding for it because Michelle Obama is pushing the message of healthier eating and consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great idea to send her the book along with other Black females that have celebrity or high political status. Someone had also suggested that I send it to Oprah because she did try a vegan diet for several weeks and didn't continue with it. So maybe if I send her this book,
absolutely.
Not only will she reconsider it, but maybe she'll even make it an Oprah Book Club Book of the Month.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have difficulty with food, and you go into some of those issues in the book. It's not just
Well, there are just so many emotional levels that are involved in our food habits. And, you know, Oprah has definitely demonstrated her challenges with diet and weight over time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But putting out lots of different programs will help herself, but the whole community at large, because a lot of people do listen to her and respect everything that she has to offer.
Yes.
Okay, so just in brief, your story, how you got to where you are today.
Well, I have to situate myself starting in New England in 1976. I was born and raised in a small area, Lebanon, Connecticut. My father bought 2.5 acres of land and was determined to raise his children on edible landscaping. So at a very young age, you know, he's like, you know, if I can't eat it, I'm not going to grow it. So he raised us on an orchard. We had our own chickens and a garden. So at a very young age, I already knew a lot of where food comes from. And he would also take us to the natural food store once or twice a week to make sure that we understood healthier eating. Now, as a teenager, sometimes you don't listen, so I still eat a lot of crap anyway. Mm-hmm. And then when I got into college, I started doing stupid things like eating Hershey bars for breakfast. Simultaneously, like most women in this country, I had horrible menstrual problems. I only went to the doctor to basically get painkillers. The doctor, the gynecologist, was never, ever able to link, you know, maybe what this teenager is putting in her body is actually causing her to have horrible menstrual cramps. And when I was around 23, 24 years old, I was diagnosed with a fibroid tumor. My mother, who was around 34, had a hysterectomy because of fibroid tumors. So I realized, you know, oh my gosh, I don't want to be like my mom or some of her sisters and both my grandmothers who also had hysterectomies due to that. So my father and I consulted each other, and he said, you know, why don't you look and see what did, you know, people of the African diaspora use before colonialism, you know, before much of our information was silenced and much of our language and healing systems were silenced once many of us were enslaved. So I talked to some friends, and a woman introduced me to this woman's work named Queen Afua, and she is a woman of African descent, and she specifically teaches mostly women of African descent how to heal their wounds through a plant-based diet. So when I was, when it was, I think, 2004, 2005, I decided literally within a week, I don't want to take the allopathic route, I don't want hormonal birth control pills, and I don't want to have surgery for my fibroid problems. So I immediately transitioned into a plant-based diet using Queen Afua's book, Sacred Woman. And literally, I shrank my tumors by 75%, and I verified this by going to a fibroid specialist, and he gave me a sonogram twice a year, and he confirmed it, and he was blown away. He did not understand what I was doing, but he said, keep on doing it. And basically what I did was, you know, once I figured that part out of my life, it just opened up my mind to many other things and questioning, you know, what else have I been consuming, not just consuming, you know, in my mouth, but in my brain, that has been misinformation and causing me a life of suffering and pain.
But so this is all I basically incredible information you're giving us. Yes, continue.
So, you know, I connected more with Queen Afua's work, and what I like about her work is that she specifically looks at collectively how Black women have suffered due to legacies of colonialism and racism that have manifested on our bodies. This is something that the mainstream rhetoric around veganism does not really look at in this country. So if you read Queen Afua's work, she will tell you, you know, our wounds as Black women have over 400 years of psychic and physical pain that has been unresolved since slavery, where the slave master, you know, they raped us. They forced us to breed slaves and took away our babies. You know, they forced us to breastfeed the slave master's children. And this psychic pain and physical pain is still something that you can see manifesting as disease in many of the Black females' wombs of today. So that was just profound for me, and that was a connection that I never felt when I had looked at the possibility of transitioning into vegan diets because other texts didn't necessarily speak to that specific racialized and gendered experience of being a black woman in this country. And then, you know, from there, it was easy for me to start making those connections to not just how environmental racism manifests on my womb health, but then also considering the fact that so many animals that are used for, quote unquote, our food literally have to go through what I think is similar that so many black women have to go through. Right. I look at my little infant and I'm thinking, I don't know what I would do if someone came over to me, hit me over the head and took my baby to eat. I mean, uh-huh. This is what, you know, so many animals have to go through, and we know just looking at how they respond, they're feeling the pain and suffering. And I'm like, I am the last person who needs to allow this to happen, because this is what happened to my own people for hundreds of years. And it's controversial for me to say this, but I'm sorry. It's common sense when you look at, you know, the sow whose little pig is taken away from her and she just freaks out, or the calf, you know, who's looking for its mom when they take the calf away for veal production. And I'm like, you know what, this happened to my people for a very long time, and I would like to promote the message that a plant-based diet will not only help heal our black communities, but will also make us more compassionate and really understand that there is a connection to non-human animal suffering and legacies of slavery and racism and the mentality that constructed these types of institutions of, you know, oppression of the master and slave ideology.
Wow. We need you on all the major talk shows. People need to hear what you have to say. Now, you were the first one who mentioned to me about Queen Afua. I want to just spell it so people can Google and find out about her.
Sure.
This is Queen Afua, so, A-F as in Frank, U-A.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of different websites. Right now I'm looking at queenafua.moonfruit.com, and that's about her wellness.
Yes. Yeah, the Wellness Institute.
The Wellness Institute, and lots of wonderful information here. And, you know, it's... Oh, there's so many things I want to say all at the same time. So this is kind of like the tip of the iceberg in some ways. Okay, you mentioned this, the problems with the womb. Humans today are experiencing all kinds of health problems. And fortunately, the plant-based diet, a whole foods plant-based diet, is really the answer for all of our chronic illnesses today. But it's also really good to focus on specific ones, because people don't hear the global message. And oftentimes we need a path that we relate to, similar experiences physically, emotionally, in order to open the door to bigger things. And this is where this is so important. I personally experienced some similar things. You know, I had mentioned to you in my emails I had had ovarian cancer. I had for decades thought I had uterine tube fibroids, and was kind of led down all these the wrong paths. And I was consuming dairy until I was about 30, and I really believe that that contributed to part of my personal problem. But, you know, I don't even think a lot of the GYNs today even acknowledge this serious problem of heavy menstruation, difficult problems with our periods. And it's something that I guess people don't want to talk about, but we need to be talking about it, because it's a symptom of a really huge problem.
And yeah,
And I also really agree that there are emotional issues involved, and there's a lot of new science talking about the memory in cells, which I'm fascinated by, and I really believe that our cells contain memory. And if that's the case, then we can pass on our memory through our children.
Yes.
Yeah. And continue.
I'm not sure when you're done talking. I apologize. I was saying that this is what really connected me to Queen Afua's work versus relying on the allopathic knowledge system of the Western doctor, because, number one, most practitioners in allopathic medicine are trained in less than 3 hours of nutrition, and it's like the USDA approved nutrition, which for the most part I don't really have trust in. And with Queen Afua, you know, she's talking about the connections that, you know, we are passing down physical and psychic I don't know, energies, I guess they can manifest within the cells of, you know, our children. And, you know, that was really profound for me. And I think about the fact that, you know, so many people think it's actually normal to have a period with pain. And it's normal to just use a Band-Aid, like, you know, Advil or Pamprin, things that actually probably are toxic to the liver and kidneys to begin with. And, you know, we also live in a culture where we don't talk about what comes out of our bodies. I've spoken to so many little girls and adult women who are disgusted if I talk to them about, you know, have you ever touched your vagina? You know, have you actually ever, you know, understood that what comes out of your vagina is not discharge, but it's beautiful cervical fluid that will allow you to know what the state of your womb is, you know, but everyone's disgusted by it. And I think that's one of the problems, not just in the African-American community, but in most, most female communities throughout this country, is there's this immediate disgust to not even know what comes out of your body and read it.
Right. Absolutely. Ah, okay. So, now, how did you get to put this book together and connect with all of these people with so many different wonderful stories that kind of came to the similar conclusion?
Well, it took about 4 years of work, and it started off in 2005 when I can't remember what prompted me to do it, but I ended up going online to Google if there are other Black people practicing veganism within America. I'd been living in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the time, and I had thought to myself, you know, I've never encountered a Black-identified vegan. What's up with that? Went online, went to blackplanet.com and saw that there was a talk about the latest PETA advertisement, Animal Liberation Project. 28 contributors on this forum were talking about how they thought PETA was racist for doing what they did, and I noticed that only one person supported that message, and she identified as a Black lesbian. So, you know, I was thinking, oh, I wonder if, you know, Black women who are, you know, marginalized in their own communities, if they would actually have a connection to this message more than other folk who may not have multiple oppressions occurring in their lives. So then I decided, you know what, I'm going to do a call for papers, and I'm going to see if I can get a diverse body of voices to look at not just animal rights, but, you know, I'm not going to look at voices who talk about veganism. I'm going to ask for voices to look at, you know, health, society, sexual orientation, anti-racism work, decolonial politics, et cetera, through the Black female vegan experience. And, you know, I did a call for papers over and over again, and I started it in 2005, but I didn't really start getting people biting back probably until a year after posting it. And then when I was trying to get publishers to consider the idea, I got most people saying nobody cares about Black female vegans. And my understanding, when someone says nobody cares, it's coded language that the white middle class demographic will not care, because that's the demographic that these books are trying to be sold to. And I did not give up. And I just, you know, I just kept on pushing through, because I knew that there's an important message there, because, you know, I'm talking to so many people of color. When I say, you know, I'm doing veganism, there's the immediate reaction that, oh, it's something that's not connected to me. It's a white, middle-class, bougie lifestyle, and, you know, a lot of them seem to be elitist. That was the response I was getting, and I was kind of concerned with that, because I was thinking, but there is a connection there to many people and their struggles, but it's just the tone and the communication of the vegan mainstream rhetoric that does not connect with many racialized minorities in this country. So if I can somehow put these voices together and convince a publishing house to take it on and see that it's not just about Black female vegans, anyone can read this book and make the connection, then I can probably make this project very successful. So what happened was that Patrice Jones, who wrote Aftershock, she wrote me the same week that I had just finished reading her book, and she wrote me to be notified about the Sister Vegan Project and when the book will finally come out. And I wrote her back and said, you know, that's really amazing that you wrote me, because I just read your book. I think it's fantastic, but I cannot find anybody, any publisher who wants to take this book, because they think they're going to lose money. So what she did was she said, you know, let me send the book to Lantern. You know, let me see what I can do. She sent the book to Lantern, and they literally got back to me in less than a week and said they want to support the idea. And it just made me feel really good, and it made me feel like, great, someone actually sees that, you know, we're all in this together, and, you know, even though it's about Black female vegans, it connects to most, I think, most social justice work out there. So they took the book, and, you know, ever since then, they've been supporting me. And just, you know, trying to help me get the word out, and, you know, helping me with the editing processes, and it's just been fantastic. So now the book has come out as of last month, and it's just been great. I've been getting tons of people emailing me. People will tell me, usually African-American women, writing me saying, I did not make the connection to, you know, what does animal rights have to do with veganism and the Black racialized experience until I picked this book up. Or there are women who were practicing vegetarianism, but they never really made the connection to animal rights. Or people who, you know, were looking into animal rights, maybe largely white identified people doing animal rights work, but never really saw the connections that I made in the book in terms of the racialized and gendered experience. So I'm very psyched about that.
Well, first, I want to just mention Lantern Books. I've had Martin Rowe on the show, and he does incredible work and doesn't get the recognition that he deserves because he's published a number of really phenomenal books, including yours, and gives people the opportunity to really share their voices where other publishers run away from these things because they're too controversial and they don't see the dollar value in it. But yeah. I would like to think that at some point his books, including yours, are really going to hit the mainstream and become very popular.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the time is, we're very close. I want to also mention the Holocaust because it's not exactly the same, but I come from a Jewish background, and whenever I try and relate what happened to those victims in the Holocaust to what we do in factory farming, you know, a lot of hairs are raised on end, and, you know, how could you compare humans with animals, and it's not the same, and it's, you know, it's a horrible thing to do, and you don't understand, and blah, blah, blah. And yet I read Eternal Treblinka, Charles Patterson's book, and he tries to make that connection, and it's all connected. It's all connected,
yes.
And I really believe that when we treat people better, we'll treat everything better.
I felt this way when I read Patterson's book as well. I mean, it was just, I thought he made a beautiful connection, and I was not offended. My mind was just opened up, you know, and I said I was not offended when I read the book. My mind just became more and more open, you know, and I just thought it was amazing that his book and The Dreaded Comparison were out there and getting people to think about these controversial topics. But, you know, one of the sister vegans, I can't remember which one, who contributed an essay, you know, she said that she didn't quite get animal rights, and she said the real problem is, you know, humans first, if they would actually start treating each other better. That's what she was saying, that maybe we wouldn't have all of these problems with the abuse and exploitation of non-human animals, and making that connection.
Well, if we really cared about our brothers and sisters, all of the humanity that's on this planet, we wouldn't allow ourselves to feed ourselves so poorly so that we got these horrible diseases. We wouldn't allow ourselves to pollute the planet with all the animal agriculture that's going on and unsustainable agriculture that's going on. We wouldn't allow any of this to happen.
Yes.
But we do. But we do. Okay. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk more about this great book and a lot of other things. So stay with us, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. And I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And I'm here with A. Breese Harper, the editor and contributor to Sista Vegan, Black Female Vegan, Speak on Food, Identity, Health, and Society. And you're welcome to send me an email if you have any comments or questions. We can talk about it on the show. The email is info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. The call-in number you probably know, 1-888-873-4643. Okay, so you're there, Breese. You're with me?
Yes.
Great. I dog-eared so many pages in this book. And I thought I might go through some of those things now. So there are all these different stories, contributions from different people and their thoughts and how they kind of came to this conclusion to get on a plant-based diet, and the spirituality, the philosophy, the emotions, the physical, everything that was involved in the journey. And one of these stories, let's see, this was Tara Sophia Bana James. She was talking about transgressing at one point and having a hot dog. And then when she was in Europe, in France, she wanted a priest to absolve her of her deed. And the priest said it wasn't a sin and wouldn't absolve her of having the hot dog. And so the conclusion was really interesting, that she couldn't count on someone else. She had to count on herself to absolve herself. And at first I was amused by the priest not absolving her of what she considered a sin, because, you know, in a lot of religions, certainly meat eating isn't a problem, and unfortunately a lot of things that aren't good for us or good for the planet are kind of accepted. I mean, we don't have to go down that path right now. But you know, it's so important. This whole book is about getting to know oneself and take responsibility for ourselves, and that a better world is only going to happen when we start with ourselves and understanding ourselves. So I really like that one. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say that that's basically the center of the book and the center of the project. So it's not just the book, but Sista Vegan is also a project. And the premise of the project is that, you know, we cannot rely on the government to necessarily step in and help us first, or to necessarily understand that, especially how consumption is connected to inequality in this world. So a premise of the project is for me to get Sista Vegans and allies to understand that, you know, we have to start with ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult for many people, especially if you live in a society like America, where you're not necessarily taught that you have it in yourself to affect change. And I was not actually born and raised in a household where we had a particular religion. But there are people I meet who come from many different sects within Christian religion, who say that they're taught that they don't have the power in themselves, that they have to rely on an outer God, an outer force greater than themselves to affect change. And I'm hoping that with this book, that people, when they read it, they'll realize that, you know, you can also affect change, and you have a lot of power within yourself, and that it may not necessarily be as harmonious to only rely on this outer energy or an outer power or the big government to help first with social justice causes.
Well, we're not going to – when we rely on everyone else, change doesn't happen. History over and over shows that it happens by one person and then another person, one by one by one by one, courageous individuals standing up for themselves, standing up for what they believe in. Government only changes after the people change.
People, yes.
I mean, it's a rare politician who will take the risk of trying to get some change in place. The politicians, they want votes. So only when the votes are behind them are they going to fight for something.
Yes.
And that's our responsibility.
And there are people, you know, I'll talk to, they'll say that they're actually scared. You know, there's a lot of fear that a lot of people do agree with the fact that the way things are now, it's horrible. But a lot of them are scared to make that leap and engage in practices that, you know, are anti-capitalism or promote animal rights or even, you know, promote anti-racist agenda because they're scared. They're scared because of what they see as consequences that can harm not just themselves, but they feel that their family is also at risk. So I get people telling me that. I'll get literally private emails, people sending me, you know, I want to do this. I want to pursue this particular way of living, but, you know, I'm in a household who's racist, or I'm in a household who only eats meat, or I'm in a household who, you know, who does X, Y, or Z in terms of sustaining oppression in this country. And they're scared. They don't know what to do. You know, I'm scared that I'm going to lose my family support or that I'll lose my job. So, you know, it's hard to kind of balance this, and I don't want to speak for everyone. I can only speak from my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have to really think, you know, what exactly can I risk at the level where I can still live comfortably, you know, because for me it's really important. Or, you know, I was telling my mom, you know, if people who are scared had never actually fought against African slavery, then I wouldn't even be on this show talking to you right now. You know,
oh,
there are people who
point.
Are very scared, people who are martyrs. And mm-hmm. I always have to remind my mom this because sometimes we had a conversation where I think I was asking her to please go out and vote for this next election or the election from the other year. And, you know, she was like, whatever, nothing I do is ever going to change and blah, blah, blah. And I was saying, you do understand there are, like, people, black and white folk who died and other ethnicities who died for you to literally have the right to vote and to actually, you know, for my father and you to move to Lebanon, Connecticut, an all-white community to buy property. Like, you do understand that. This just didn't happen randomly. And she's like, you know what, you're right, you know. She didn't really, she kind of forgot because, like, sometimes people are so overwhelmed that there's nothing I can do. And I'm like, well, look at the fact that, you know, if you're a woman that you're able to have more rights now and you're not, you know, suppressed. If you're a person who is not straight identified, look at all of the human rights laws that are in place for you. You know, if you're a person who's not white, so, you know, this does not happen overnight. And there are people, literally, you don't literally have to be a martyr and die, but, you know, look at what you can actually give up and still live comfortably and be safe. And, you know, it may seem like you're losing something right now, but in fact, you're actually gaining. You're gaining it. You're not going to see it necessarily overnight, but you are gaining, you know, a more just world, a world that has less suffering for not just yourself, but, you know, your children and other non-human species. So I try to ask people to just consider that. I know not everyone is in their own unique situation, but, you know, don't feel powerless. There is something that you can do, even if you think it's quote-unquote little. Whatever you do with a mindset that is positive and with love and compassion, you literally will make someone else's life and your own life a little less hectic and have a little less suffering, you know. So
it all starts with a step.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts with a step. I liked I liked all the chapters, but Tashae Meadows had a lot of interesting things to say. And in addition to what we were talking about just now about fear, so many people are afraid because of whatever situation they're in, but also we're kind of encouraged to be afraid. That our government puts out things to keep us in fear in order to keep us in control. And she writes, if we are what we eat, we can choose to be fear and terror or bright green sprigs mm-hmm. of broccoli. We can choose to be yeah. orphans and prisoners or strong leafy collards. We can choose to be pain and death or vibrant mangoes. And or we can choose to consume violence and dine on terror or choose a vegan lifestyle that nourishes our body, gives us peace of mind, and provides sustenance for our souls. Peace begins on our plates. I like that one.
Yeah, it's very profound because, you know, it's not just like the food, but, yeah, we are fed in this culture. We are fed a lot of fear and negativity that is masked as democratic freedom, and it's pretty scary, you know, when I hear people tell me why they choose to consume and what I perceive as a very destructive way, not just to their bodies, but also to the planet, because the planet and the body are connected. And You know, they just have this fear. When if I ask someone, you know, why is it you won't consider not necessarily a vegan diet, but a more plant-based diet? Mm-hmm. And you know, they'll say, well, you know, my family tells me that if I don't eat steak or chicken once a week, that I'm going to get sick, I'm going to die. You know, if not just the consumption of food, but you know, if I choose to go against my family's belief that, you know, for instance, it's bad to go and find a relationship outside of my own racial ethnic identity, that I'm going to, you know, dishonor them. Like, there's just this fear, you know, it's always this fear culture. And it's very sad, it's very unproductive. And I feel like, you know, this book is a book of voices where these women decided to kind of go against it. And see what happens. And it seems like from the essays that first the transformation was difficult. Some of them may have not had the support that they needed, but ultimately they realized it was at least the best choice for them and that they don't have any regrets. And I'm hoping that these essays can be very inspiring for people that are not necessarily just not sure if they should pursue a more plant-based diet, but, you know, just pursue a more just life around issues around race and gender and sexual orientation. By that, I mean, you know, trying to understand what I can do in my life that can make the isms, you know, alleviate the isms, the racism, the classism, the transphobia, the homophobia, even though at first, you know, I'm scared because I've been told that if I were to go that path, then I will lose support, I may lose job opportunities, you know, I may be disowned by my family. So I'm just hoping that this book can be kind of inspirational for people who are at that path or at that point on the path to make that decision. Do I continue and collaborate with a country that keeps on feeding us fear and we live our lives by making decisions based on fear, or do I continue on a path where I make decisions based on love and compassion and be courageous?
I'm trying to remember which one it was that wrote about as a young girl, maybe she was six or something, and made the realization that the lamb her mother was serving was the baby, was a real lamb, and that a chicken was, you know, a real bird.
Do you remember? It's been Adama. Adama, maybe? The fulfillment of a movement? Let me see in my book. Yep. So Adama Moesha, which of all the essays, I like them all, but hers really spoke to me. I thought hers was amazing, and it was good to hear a voice from a woman that's old enough to be my mother, that generation, and how she... her consciousness came about during, you know, the 1960s and a time of civil rights movement activism, and, you know, how she kind of made these connections early. So I was thinking, wow, you know, you were making these connections in the 60s. That's really awesome. How she asked, you know, when she – oh, sorry, yes?
Yeah, no, it was just a very moving story because she went through so much pain. And just in the beginning when she was young and made this little realization, and I basically there was no support, and
her father said, I'll beat you. I'll beat you if you don't eat it, you know. It's just amazing to be told that when you're a little kid, you know, I don't want to eat this. This lamb is my friend. Lambs are my friend. And your father telling you, I'll beat your butt if you don't eat it. You know, what does that tell a little child? It's just very confusing. And
very
for her
confusing.
To actually... You know,
so this was really an inspirational story because she really rose above all of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, that's just another message. We all have it within us. You know, rather to accept being the victim, there's always something that we could do, one small step to make a difference, lead us all to a better place.
Yeah.
And, you know, even see, you know, it's horrible what her parents had done or her father had done, but, you know, I like to think, why were they the way they were? Obviously, they had experienced something terrible as well, and that's why we really need to see everything through love.
Yes. I was really impressed by her essay, how, you know, she talks about when she gets to university, she just didn't understand, how can, you know, the faculty ever teach me about truth when they themselves are consuming lies, death, and disease? And I thought that was so profound. Like, how are you going to smoke a pack a day, drink alcohol, eat fried chicken, and then think that you have the capacity to actually teach me truth? And I was just so, that was so profound, you know, and that was just one of the reasons I wanted her to contribute to the book, because before she had written this, I had gone and spoken to her, and she had interviewed me on our radio show a few years ago, and just, she was just, the way she was able to make the connections, I mean, was just so amazing. And I was thinking, yeah, that's true. You know, if I actually see that someone who's supposed to be a guru or has a high position of authority and supposed knowledge try to tell me about truth, yet I see them and my perception is consuming not just negative food, but negative thoughts and negative forms of entertainment, would they actually really be able to actually tell me the truth, share mm-hmm. with me, you know, productive knowledge? So she was one of the people that kind of helped me make that next leap forward to making connections where I didn't actually see before. So I think her essay is incredibly powerful, where, you know, consumption on all levels, can you be true to yourself? Can you actually gain wisdom if you yourself are consuming negative energies, and those energies being food or certain forms of entertainment? It just takes it to a level that I have yet to see in the conversations I've had with most people.
She talks about how she had more clarity as she improved her diet. So it's like a not necessarily a chicken and an egg, but it keeps supporting going to a higher level. The less garbage you consume, the more clarity you have, and then you have more energy and wisdom to do even better. And it just keeps supporting you doing greater things. And then something else I wanted to say about her that I really liked. And what was it? Oh, the thing about how we give a lot of people of authority so much power and give them this position of authority, and certainly professors in universities and my favorite, doctors. So many people give doctors so much authority, and as you mentioned earlier in the show, most of them have so little education and knowledge in nutrition. And we go to them and we believe that they're the voice of God. And they're not. And so anyone that has any kind of health issue really needs to participate in their own healing. It's not just the doctor. You're not going to get well unless you are in charge.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know that, because, you know, there's that fear once again. And I've had, I don't know if you've had in your personal experience, when I try to offer an alternative understanding of what is going on in my body, most doctors I talk to, trained in the West, don't want to hear it. You know, they try to tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about. And, you know, it's very shocking to me that, you know, I'm trying to help my body. I know my body better than you because it's my body. Why can't we have a collaboration without you thinking that I'm trumping some type of authority that you think you have over me? And there's so many people I meet who have been trained to believe that the doctor knows more about their own body than themselves. And it breaks my heart, because there are people I'll talk to who, you know, their health ends up, you know, sometimes the doctors do help, but a lot of times the doctors end up sometimes doing more damage because they're not listening to the person. They're not considering the person's, you know, as a whole being, and they too have knowledge that can help the doctor help them. So it's just like, once again, fear, fear, fear. You know, what if I don't listen to the doctor? You know, I remember when my mom told me when I was first born, I was definitely sick. They expected me to die. I was preemie. I was a twin, 3 pounds, 11 ounces. They did not realize that the milk-based formula they were giving me was literally killing me. Mm-hmm. And my mom said to the doctor, "Are you sure it's not the formula?" Every time we give it to her, she starts screaming. And the doctor trumped this woman's knowledge and was saying, "You know, I've never heard of that before. Why would she be allergic to milk? You know,
right.
If there's something wrong with your daughter, it's not our practice. It's not, you know, how we understand pediatrics." And, you know, that my mother made a decision to take me off formula and decided, she was not able to breastfeed me, but she decided to, at the time she had, I guess, access to soy-based or non-milk-based formula to give me. But, you know, the mere fact that I hear the same thing 34 years later. It hasn't gotten better. But
absolutely.
For the doctor not to actually believe the mother that maybe, you know, observing her daughter that she would get sick every time that she would be given this formula. And they're still telling people to eat certain things, even though if the person comes back and says, you know what, it's making me sick. Oh, it must be you. You must be doing it wrong. It can't possibly be, you know, this pharmaceutical pill that we've given you. It can't possibly be, you know, this or that. It's just horrible. It gets confusing. People have fear. It just gets very confusing, especially if you don't have the support when you want to go a different route and your friends and family think that you're crazy for doing that. You should stick to, you know, what the allopathic doctor says.
It's so important to listen to that voice inside you and really cultivate it and develop it. And we've, you know, a lot of us have been taught not to. Again, there are so many different ways I could go here and talk hours about, but doctors, I want to think that they really have our best interest in mind. But
yes.
In a lot of cases, it's suspect. And, I mean, we even have some extreme cases where experiments have been done and on certain people that where the known outcome was not going to be very good. Or
yes.
I think most recently there was some pesticides experiment in northern Florida in a poor community, exposing people to what we know is already not healthy without their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that, unfortunately, too.
Yeah, there's the book by Harriet Washington, Medical Apartheid. It's an extensive history of specifically black people being experimented on.
The Tuskegee experiment is the biggest one, but she's saying it's more
than just that. You know, it's just also people, other people of color, very poor communities that get experimented on, people living with disabilities. I mean, it's horrible. So you also have that too. Like when I go into the doctor's office, which is very, very rare, I have that in my head too. You know, am I going to be treated a certain way? Are you going to experiment on me or not even give me information that I deserve because of a narrative you have in your head about black women in this country?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that specifically I went to my gynecologist while I was pregnant, and I got to the point where I had to dump her because she was upset with me that I wanted to do a collaborative where I have a midwife and I have her. And she just wanted me to choose, you know. And I did not understand why I could not have her as my practitioner, because my health insurance would only cover those costs when I would try to get, you know, consultations, I guess once a month you have to go. And then when I want to have a delivery, I did a home birth. Why can't my midwife be there and do the home birth? And she was offended. She was absolutely offended that I had proposed that, you know. She didn't say it, but I could hear from her tone and her getting annoyed with me, you know, you're going to give birth in 3 weeks. You have to make a choice. It was just this lack of compassion. It felt like she felt I was trumping her authority over this midwife. And it was just like, this is not helpful. So I was scared, but I was like, you know, what if I, you know, she's telling me I have a friend who tried to do a home birth and things didn't go right, and now her son has cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, are you serious? You know, what about all the statistics that show in a well-planned home birth that the mothers are fine, the children are fine for the most part? But no, she had to give me the fear story, you know.
Yeah.
And then she was pissed off because I didn't buy the fear story, and I ended up dumping her. So it was crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, another message I have for people is that any kind of health situation you're in, you absolutely must feel comfortable with your doctor. You have to feel at peace with them and know that you're on the same path, and don't be scared into anything. You should, if you're afraid, you need to look further, because you have to be walking the same path. It's so important. Okay, so we don't have a lot of time left, but I wanted to say a number of things. Number one, people should go to your websites. You have breezeharper.com, BreezeHarper.com, and sistaveganproject.com. That's sistaveganproject.com, sistaveganproject.com. And definitely check out this book, Sister Vegan. It's really phenomenal, and I know I'm going to be buying a lot and giving them away.
Thank you.
So the last thing I want to talk about, which is my favorite subject, which is food and favorite foods and what you eat and what you feed your family. I know you have a young son.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my son is awesome because I got him started on things that most little kids in this country don't like. So I give him every morning spirulina, which he loves. I mean, he loves it. I can't feed it to him fast enough. It gets it all over his face. But I also make green smoothies, and I got him used to it from the beginning. So we do a kale smoothie every morning. I have a Vitamix blender, which I saved up for and finally got when my other one died, and he loves it. This kid loves kale smoothies. And then I make these for my overall womb health, but also I make it for the whole family. And I just recently made a red cabbage ginger avocado smoothie. He loved it.
Wow.
So we're doing a lot of, you know, just whole foods, a lot of raw stuff in the morning, raw hemp protein. He likes his beans, so I'll soak beans overnight and make a colorful array of beans. I do have to let people know, you know, I am in a situation where I am in North Berkeley. I'm financially stable. I'm in California. So I have access to a variety of foods that I know many other people may not have. But I've got him used to healthy eating from the get-go. So that's the only thing he's ever known. And he's at the point now where he can grab things on his own. So he was grabbing the avocado and trying to eat it because he loves avocado. And I was trying to say, you know, you can't eat through the peel, you know, poking his finger through and trying to suck out the stuff inside the avocado. I feed my family. I just think of the kitchen as my medicine cabinet, and the mere fact that, you know, my son just loves all of these foods that supposedly little kids don't like is amazing. And I got him used to. I make my own spicier foods, like Indian food, and he's already used to that, like garlic and cayenne. And so far, I've been doing probably about 70% breast milk for him, and then the other 30% is him just eating the foods that my husband and I are eating. So my
How
favorite,
old is he
and
now?
I have it on my website. He just turned 12 months. My favorite are kale smoothies, and people think it's probably gross if you're not used to it, but I mean, I transition into that because that's what keeps my womb and my overall body healthy. Kale smoothie, I'll mix the kale, a bunch of kale, avocado, kiwi, water, flaxseed oil, spirulina, and chlorella, and you know, blend it with one or two pitted dates, and that's what we do every morning. It's my favorite. I can definitely tell a difference in my awareness and my health when I drink that. And your womb will love you if you do this like twice a day. I'm telling you, it will love you if you do that and take out the processed crap and integrate a green smoothie and red cabbage, you know, preferably raw if you can. People say they can't digest it. That's why I recommend that you blend in fresh ginger or papaya with it so you can digest it better. And I love it. That's my favorite.
Very good. Well, the human body is very forgiving, so any of us that haven't been given that excellent start can still do a lot of improvement by starting with some whole healthy foods, and you'll be able to see your boost in energy, your weight balancing, clarity, all of that. But children, especially starting from birth on a healthy diet, I mean, I'm excited to see what becomes of him. I mean, the children that I know that have been started this way, they are really intelligent. Their behavior is phenomenal. They socialize, you know, extremely well, and it's just an example of what we can really be and beyond. So that's really exciting. And he's very lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Okay. So what are you working on now?
Well, currently I'm working on my dissertation. I just passed my PhD exam a few weeks ago. So
congratulations.
My dissertation, thank you, will actually look at how black females producing vegan spaces talk to and against whiteness as the norm in America. So my focus is on critical race theory and critical food geographies. And I'm curious, you know, what does it mean to be a black female in this country with this collective history around racism and classism and sexism? How does that actually produce a consciousness to understand veganism in a way that is very much different from the white middle class vegan experience? So my dissertation is more a theoretical social science understanding of black female vegan epistemologies. So there's the, you know, the anthology that just came out, which is more or less the stories that most people who can read English can understand without having a high-end degree. And the dissertation work kind of takes it to the next level using critical race theory and critical whiteness studies. To just understand, you know, why is it someone like Queen Afua, why does that book speak so much, better, I don't know if that's the right grammar, sorry, better to most black women who encounter it? You know, why is it the way her consciousness was constructed, if you look at how she has dealt with race and class and gender, why is it that she produced this book that makes race and class and gender an obvious factor within how people understand diets? Versus most of the mainstream books, which I did enjoy reading the book Skinny Bitch, but if you read a book like that, there is no critical, none. There's no critical reflection on, you know, how is being white and middle class in this country with the history that we have around race and class, how's that actually constructed my understanding and practice and deployment of veganism? So that's kind of what I'm looking at. I'm not looking to judge or bash anyone. I'm just looking at understanding how race affects consciousness so people involved in health and food justice activism can understand why certain racialized minority communities are not willing to embrace the white middle class vegan or, you know, other alternative food system message around health and healing.
Okay. That's a big mouthful, and I'm going to listen to this show again on the archive to digest all of that, because there was a lot of brilliance there. So thank you, Breeze Harper, for all the work that you're doing and all the work that I know you're going to continue to do. Please check out her website and buy the book, Sista Vegan. And this has been It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.